Poetry on the radio, poetry in and around the ACT. Today, younger Australian voices. Plus, the Rhyming Bugle, poetry news from Canberra and its region. Today, the first of a series of episodes about younger Australian poets, starting with Prithvi Bharatarajan. I'm Kimberly K. Williams. Prithvi Bharatarajan read and talked about his poetry in Canberra in September 2022 at the Poetry on the Move Festival, hosted by the University of Canberra's Centre for Creative and Cultural Research. He was introduced by Paul Hetherington, professor of writing at the University of Canberra and co-founder of the International Prose Poetry Project.
Prithvi Bharatarajan is a writer, editor, and literary audio producer. He's done a whole lot of creative stuff. It's really hard to summarise the extent of his creative work in across a variety of media, because a lot of it sort of intersects one with the other. He lives in Nam, Melbourne. He started writing poems in around 2009, I think. He published a collection of poems, entries, in 2020. He's worked in the essay form, including hybrid essay form, something dear to my heart as somebody interested in prose poetry and hybridity, as well as in the lyric. And he's also, I think, well, my reading is fascinated by narrative and the personal voice in his work, including essays that, and poetry in a way that engages with analysis and the lyric and ficto-criticism, and also broader cultural or literary issues. Prithvi.
This is the first poem in this collection, and it's called Electricity Pylons in Abu Dhabi. I'm in Abu Dhabi. I looked out the window of the Skybus on the way to Tullamarine Airport in Melbourne and had some unusual thoughts as we passed electricity pylons and neat squares of concrete bordering the freeway, such as, I don't understand. The same thought was attached to seeing trees fly by the window. I don't think it was environmentalist or anti-modern. The thought relates to others that arose when I moved house, which I think was last night. I was looking at furniture in my room, the tall black bookshelf, the solid wooden desk, and thinking, how can I own all these things I didn't make? My perspective becomes strange when I'm made aware of my dependence on the dollar, to hire a van, to buy all this furniture, to buy indoor plants, sometimes even to pay someone to change a tire on my bike. And this is the last poem from this collection. It's called Love Poem. Our third date at the same bar as our first. Elbows edging across a cold, polished tabletop. Our second date, an anomaly, at a Chinese restaurant. Its patrons elbow to elbow. We were confused by ours, so close to theirs, and by each other. Forbes once said in a poem, continually disappoint the expectations of others. This way, you'll come to hate yourself, and they'll be charmed by your distress. As I wait for my hand to find yours, I chant it to myself, a mantra for our parting, our eyes spearing at the dark. Miscellaneous Dreaming. I'm reading Marquez's 100 Years of Solitude, wishing I'd read it from cover to cover, but not managing more than 15 pages at a time. Salman Rushdie calls it the greatest novel in any language of the last 50 years, with his usual hyperbolic enthusiasm. I like Marquez because he's very readable and at the same time doesn't seem bound by categories that other readable writers are bound by. The main category, I suppose, is the real. In dispensing with telling stories about the real, and by revelling in the implausible, is the real in story form the plausible, he offers an ideal to aspire to, at least to me in this particular moment, inner flexibility, being open to mental possibilities that exist because you're not bound so strictly to codes that script your thinking. Of course, you have to follow these codes to all outward appearances in everyday settings, to work and to go through social rituals that mark you as functional, normal. But privately, in your mind, you can subvert them and you can dream. Dreaming is what's been missing from my experience and is what I'm trying to claim. I'm not sure I've ever given myself room to dream in ways that might mark me as eccentric. To feel deeply, yes. To dream, no. The spirit of this dreaming is in the experience of reading fiction, which is why I love reading fiction, even though my professional interest is in lyric poetry, a poetry that, while nourishing to read and feel and think about, also presents a trap. The trap of personality, of the single voice that has had its inconsistencies snipped out, like aberrant noises in a waveform. I'm thinking of a line by Thomas Mann about his fiction. Paraphrased, it's, "I have found the masks through which I can speak." I wonder what it says about you that you need masks through which to speak. A friend told me recently that he had to identify his outer mask and then smash it in order to feel grounded in his authentic self. But what about acquiring more masks and refracting your spirit through several mouthpieces that sound out different aspects of yourself and your desires?
Prithvi Varatharajan. His book Entries, which appeared from Cordite Books in 2020, raises issues around, to put it broadly, what can constitute poetry. Entries merges different modes of writing, from the quite prosaic to the more recognizably poetic. I asked Prithvi how that came about. He explained that the book took seed from his abandoning all social media. Leaving social media renewed his desire to communicate rewardingly with his friends. So he set up a kind of email newsletter. He sent emails to himself, but blind copied friends, and here's what came of that.
So for them, it would be like, oh, Prithvi's talking to himself.
Yes.
And we in the audience can't see each other. Mm-hmm. We're invisible to each other. So there's no pressure to kind of perform a response, as I would associate with social media. And we can respond if we like, we don't have to. And it was this sort of practice that went on for about 2 years. And I had, I accumulated something like 200 letters, possibly more. And afterwards, I went back and I started editing those. One of the recipients actually said, oh, you should maybe think about publishing these because they're quite literary. And I started editing those and then I started setting those alongside sort of tighter lyric poems, sometimes on the same subject or similar subjects. And just it was experimenting with that sort of composition across the manuscript. And so it was kind of a playful experimental project. And then I gave it to a couple of readers and said, is this anything? You know, what is this? And they're like, this is kind of coherent. This is, you know, you should think about this as a collection. So when I say it was a singular kind of project, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
It came about that way.
So how did you decide the order, or how did you decide the organization of the presentation of all the pieces?
Initially, I had, I think, 7 thematic containers where I sort of basically corralled these different forms of writing into. And they started from the kind of macro, went to the micro. So they started with experience, reflection, literary.
Yeah.
They were sort of provisional working titles. And then I had, so the first bit of it was kind of more philosophical, more my thoughts in response to other books.
Yes.
And then the second bit of it moved from the world to kind of family. So world, nation, family. And I put the writing in those kind of thematic containers. And then when we were editing it, kind of removed those dividers and started moving things around a bit, but basically that structure is still there.
Prithvi Varatarajan's mixing of modes of writing produces striking and sometimes amusing pieces. Here's one about obtaining a university clearance to interview someone.
The risks of everyday living. I'm completing an ethics clearance application to interview someone for my research. I'll be interviewing him by email, asking mild questions. Mild in the sense that they're framed to elicit considered and rational responses to cultural policy documents, rather than intended to push him into a pit of writhing emotion. I'm required to include this in my application. Foreseeable risks of your involvement in my study. There are no foreseeable risks of your involvement in my study above the risks of everyday living. What are the risks of everyday living? I ask myself as I sit here with my head on my palm, toying with a pencil. It's the stuff of a poem, but I'm not in a state of mind to pencil one. Instead, let me try to make a list of everyday risks. Wheeled chairs that move out from under you as you're lowering your bottom to their cold seats. Metal filing cabinets that could crush you like a bug, and which seem to you, as you lie there with internal hemorrhaging and your wings torn, to be an incarnation of the gangly braces you wore in your teenage mouth. Suit-clad businessmen who, in your state of animal terror, appear as henchmen from Kafka's fiction, pushing you violently into a toilet cubicle where your teeth shatter on the porcelain. Yes, I'll include some of these in my application. I'll asterisk risks of everyday living and put these in the appendix.
Given the formal innovations of Prithvi Varatarajan's writing, it can be easy to overlook one crucial element in it, his keen observation of human interactions. We heard that in his poem about his research subject. I asked him about that.
Do you see that in yourself? Do you feel yourself studying people in the world in that way?
That's a good question. I think that aspect of the writing probably does reflect something in personality, where I think I am quite sensitive to social interactions. Mm. And so there's often trains of thought in my mind about what's happening in a dynamic, mm. in a social dynamic. How do I feel mm-hmm. in that scene? How are people responding to me and me to them? Yeah, in ways that can get a bit intricate, where there's kind of a lot of thoughts going on there. And I wouldn't say that might evoke, for some people when they hear that description, they might think, oh, that sounds like anxiety. But I wouldn't say it's an anxious experience. It's more kind of, yeah, a sensitive one.
At the Poetry on the Move Festival in September 2022, Varatarajan appeared on a panel titled Hybridity in Prose Poetry, which addressed some of the questions his work raises, including, can even seemingly prosaic prose serve as the stuff of poetry? He was asked about which writers have influenced his work and how, and about the aesthetic and even political dimensions of writing prose poetry, which remains a contentious form. Varatarajan suggested that formal distinctions between prose and poetry aren't really the point. He asked, isn't the point that the form fits the intended expression? He talked about how he drew inspiration from Vicky Vitticus, an Australian poet who wrote sketch-like but carefully crafted pieces about her own bracing experiences and open-eyed travel. Vitticus was active from the late 1960s to her death in 1998, and is remembered as a counterculture figure in the group of Sydney poets known as the Generation of 68.
Vitticus was influenced quite a bit by French surrealist poets and spoke about this in some interviews. And I had so many thoughts on the subject of hybridity in prose poetry, and I thought I could talk about the aesthetic, which I'm doing now, the artful aspects of it, and I could talk about the political, because I did really think of categorical thinking, saying this is poetry over here, this is prose over here, and where that kind of categorical thinking comes from. But I'm going to stick with the aesthetic, and if it comes up again, we can talk about the political.
So another link, I think, with prose poetry that has captivated me may be an influence, although I did discover him more recently. Francis Ponge was a 20th century French poet who for a while was involved with the Surrealists and was influential to them. So you can see a link here with Surrealism. And he was an object poet who kind of paid sustained attention to particular things like oranges, potatoes, soap, or a table, and wrote poetic paragraphs, prose poems, about them. And sometimes even those poems sought to get inside the object to kind of describe something like their psyche. So what I'll read is a prose poem where he's standing at the River Seine and he starts to describe it. This is Nancy Willard's translation from the French, and she's also a critic, and she offers a kind of offers her thoughts on this. So this is by Francis Ponge. "But still, how to give an account of the depth of the waters and the bed of ooze, or the stones on which they roll, how to prepare it for them, and the grasses, the rushes, the reeds that the water stirs, that it combs as it passes, confusedly, passionately. How to pass to the interior of the central text, allegedly showing the letters of the liquid material, or how to bring to the surface that which swims or floats at the interior or on the top of the waters. The infallible cruising of the fish, the crucifix of the horizontal wheel embedded in soft material, or the indolent intrauterine capers of some drowned man travelling in the fetal position." And this is Nancy Willard. These are her thoughts. Ponge gets around these problems that he poses in the prose poem with a highly flexible genre, which he calls a poem, a prose poem, or a verbal equivalent. He's not interested in the technical distinctions between prose and poetry. Although he calls himself a poet and an artist in prose, most of his pieces are written in prose. He defines the poem as an object of joy proposed for humankind. It works if it expresses the particular perfections of whatever he's writing about. These determine the form, for like any organic creature, the poem forms itself according to its own laws. If a poem gives you the joy that comes from a renewed contact with your world, then it satisfies Ponge's requirements. And one other thing she says about him is that Ponge wants to remake the world because he believes that nothing has been properly expressed. And I just think that sentiment is probably common among poets, that there are experiences of the world or the world itself that we don't feel have been properly expressed, and we're seeking, sort of struggling to express that.
A question came from the audience. Is writing prose poetry a sort of political act?
For all of you who are working not just in the traditional lyric form, but are trying to extend various forms of utterance, is some of that got to do with challenges to social or political or even, you know, other kinds of conventions? You know, the sorts of things that have been handed down and perhaps that may need some kind of challenging.
Bharatharajan framed his response in terms of resisting thinking within dominant categories.
You know, on the one hand, maybe you could say it's productive to kind of contain things and kind of feel that you are working within the tradition of poetry and that can be enriching for you. But I just have noticed more and more, I guess, a kind of a typical move, and I associate this with Western logic, where you have separate categories and then there's a bridge. And, you know, binaries are everywhere, and it's always kind of there's one and two, and you bridge them. And I was kind of thinking, in my early days at uni, I grew up mostly in Adelaide, but I was born in India, and I had a very close friend at uni who was really brilliant. And I remember saying to him, it was a moment of friction, and I just said, you know, you keep putting things in categories. And he's like, yeah, of course, like this is how you learn. And I just recently thought of, like, when you think of a religion like Hinduism, which is there in my family, I'm not myself Hindu, or I don't call myself that, but it's a pantheistic religion, so it's not like there's one god that you divide into three. There's, like, you know, thousands, and they incarnate as each other. And I just thought that must have, you know, where you come from must influence how you approach art. You know, whether you want to work in that one thing or you kind of find that a bit of a constraint. So I don't know if I've talked about politics there, but...
He suggested, too, that even though prose poetry is as much a heard form as a read one, and layout often doesn't matter too much, sometimes the way his writing is represented on a page does remain important.
I'd probably say I'm generally more of an oral person than a visual person, and some of the writing in here, I think the poetic occurs in the sound of the lines, but I'm not so concerned with if it was reprinted and the shape of it on the page looked differently. I wouldn't be so concerned, but I had a recent sort of thing where there were 7 poems selected for, there's an anthology of Indian poets, and it's edited by Jeet Tayal, who's a poet and novelist. And I find this a very nice, inclusive gesture because it's Indian poets all around the world. Also nice to be in the Anthology of Australian Prose Poetry. I like this sort of doubling. But anyway, the 7 that I submitted, they basically just formatted them all as sort of prose. And I protested about one of them in particular where it was a prose poem. So I knew that it was a prose poem. The lineation was important. Where the line ended was important. So I insisted on that having a shape that I wanted, and the others, in my mind, they were poetic prose. You know, I wouldn't mind if someone was just like, that's prose. But I made that distinction, and that visual shape was important for that one.
Prithvi Bharatarajan at the 2022 Poetry on the Move Festival. Let's hear 2 more of his pieces.
This is called A Clatter of Leaves, Rain Like Shiny Nails. A prose poem by Vicky Vidicus from India Inc., which I requested from the Rare Books Collection at the State Library of Victoria. 2 of her other books weren't where they should be on the shelf, and I suspect they were lifted long ago. They're rare, I said to the librarian who helped me search. Ah, that explains it. Someone probably took them. The poem leapt out to me because the place she writes from, Mamallapuram, is where I came very close to drowning. I know it as Mahabalipuram, the opening of the poem, where the sand ends and endeavor begins, reminds me of swimming for my life, far out from the shore, where I was caught in a rip. I didn't think I'd make it back, but after what felt like an hour of struggling, I lay on my back in the sea, exhausted. I recovered some energy and then swam diagonally against the current, slowly, with my arms beginning to ache and my lungs already tired. I eventually made it back to the shore. Once on land, I searched and found the pale red flag high up on a flagpole that meant definitely do not swim. In classic Indian style, it was so faded that it was invisible unless you went looking for it among the palm trees. The year was 2012 or 2013. New Year's Eve in Tasmania. That summer of 2002, on the eve of the new year, I was in Tasmania, sipping red wine with a priest and my father in a caravan park. His name, the priest, not my father's, was Felix, or Sebastian, something like Father Felix Sebastian, visiting from India on a world tour. He said, "The young people here are very mature." He said this looking at my wine glass. "Yes, I suppose it's exposure to a thing that matures one," I said, looking at his wine glass. We downed our blood. The priest inquired how many glasses I would tolerate before I lost my mind. Father impressed on him that I was a rather mature young man. Soon after, the priest and my father retired to separate cabins. It was New Year's Eve, so I scuffed around for something to do. I switched on the TV, ate many bars of Tasmanian fudge,
watched Monty Python's The Meaning of Life as the clock ticked over to 2003 in a cabin between the priests and my father's, father snoring on one side, the priest perhaps turning pages on the other.
Prithvi Varatarajan.
The Rhyming Bugle. On Monday, January 23, that poetry thing will hold its first event of 2023 from 7 to 9pm, an extended open mic. That poetry thing's open mics have a 3-minute limit for each poet, and poets can register to read on the night of the event at Smith's Alternative in Civic. Also coming up at Smith's, on January 30, that poetry thing features Andrew Ritchie and Larice Vera. On February 6, Jeff's Poetry features Paul Kane and Moya Pacey. And on February 13, that poetry thing features Sandra Renew and P.S. Cottier. Sandra Renew and P.S. Cottier will launch their new book, V8, from Ginninderra Press on that Monday, February 13. Renew's honours include winning the ACT Writers Notable Awards for Poetry 2021 for her collection It's the Sugar, Sugar from Recent Work Press. She also took the 2020 ACT Writing and Publishing Award for Poetry and was shortlisted for the 2020 ACT Book of the Year for her collection Acting Like a Girl. Published in 2019 by Recent Work Press, that book reflects on gender, sexuality and coming out in the far north Queensland of the 1970s and 80s. P.S. Cottier's book of poetry, Utterly, was shortlisted for the ACT Book of the Year in 2021. In their new book, the two poets reflect on motor vehicles, transportation and roads travelled. On February 20, at the Playhouse at the Canberra Theatre Centre, English poet, novelist and playwright for the Royal Shakespeare Company, Kay Tempest, appears. Social commentary with synth grooves. The 2023 Peter Porter Poetry Prize was announced on January 19. Chosen from a shortlist of 5 poems was Peripheral Phantasmal by Dan Disney, a South Korean and Australian writer. The shortlisted poems appear in the January-February issue of the Australian Book Review. They were selected from 1,132 entries sent from 34 countries. The long list for the Porter Prize included On Seeing the Statue of Darius from Susa by Peter Ram of Robertson, New South Wales, and The Paddy Melon Wars by Canberra-based Penelope Leyland. 5 Canberra-area poets appear in the recently released Best of Australian Poems 2022 anthology from Australian Poetry. Those writers and their selected poems are Judith Nangala Crispin, Purgatory, Theodore L. Tenebrae, Jennifer Kamara Martinello, OAM, Being My Grandmother's After Uluru, Omar Musa, Flannel Flowers, and Issy Unikowski, Pumping Station. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of ArtSound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Special thanks to Annika Grant. Poetry on the Radio is heard each Sunday at 4:30pm and again at 10:30pm on Mondays. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. The music on today's program is from the Li Pui Ming Ensemble's 1993 album, Ninefold Heart. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.